as I said, it's the second talk of our practice period. And last week, Jean gave a great description of what a practice period is, and also an overview of the Buddha's discourse, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, in particular about the first foundation, which is mindfulness of the body. And that's the theme of our practice period. So tonight's talk, as I said, is mindfulness of breathing, which is the very first teaching in a series of six teachings on the mindfulness of the body. So in a way, mindfulness of breathing can be seen as the very beginning of a path which the Buddha says leads in one direction toward the realization of nirvana, the complete freedom from greed and hatred and ignorance. So mindfulness of breathing is the beginning, but it also extends into and supports and sustains all the other mindfulness practices and the insight practices that are included in the rest of the sutta. So it kind of has a lot of importance. Breathing in, breathing out. So automatic, isn't it? Taken for granted. So easy. But as we know, cultivating mindfulness of breathing, placing our attention on the breath and keeping it there, is not so easy. In this discourse and in others, the Buddha gives us some guidance on how to do it. So to the discourse. And I'll be using discourse and sutta interchangeably here. Sutta is just the Pali word for discourse or teaching or sermon. The discourse starts out like this. And how, monks, does he, in regard to the body, abide contemplating the body? Here, gone to the forest, or root of a tree, or an empty hut, he sits down. Having folded his legs crosswise and set his body erect, he establishes mindfulness in front of him. Mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. So if the Buddha were talking to us here tonight, wouldn't that be nice if he were talking to us here tonight? I hope he wouldn't tell us to go outside and sit under a tree. Well, it's not raining right now. Actually, today it might have been quite pleasant sitting under a tree. But I imagine that he would tell us to go to a place where we can really devote ourselves to mindfulness and to contemplation. Perhaps a room at home or a corner of a room, or any spot that we've reserved to be our place to meditate. So that when we go there, the place itself kind of anchors us and reminds us to be present and attentive. A place that we can enjoy and one that feels kind of welcoming. And hopefully the Buddha would tell us that it's okay to sit on a bench or in a chair, since we didn't grow up sitting cross-legged like the monks and the nuns and other people in India. And as for sitting with our body erect, most of us can probably do that. Back straight, not rigid, relaxed and alert. The same posture of body that we're hoping to cultivate with the posture of our mind. Relaxed diligence. Not too loose, not too tight. So now that we're situated, the next thing is he establishes mindfulness in front of him. Mindful, he breathes in. Mindfulness, he breathes out. According to Bhikkhu Bodhi, mindfulness in front of him means to make mindfulness primary. In this case, primarily mindfulness of breathing. One way of doing that is to set an intention to keep the mind on the breath, breathing in and breathing out. then when the mind wanders, you can just say, reset the intention and to bring the mind back, or just reset. Another way of doing it is to, and this is kind of interesting, to kind of lower the inner gaze to the breath. You know, even with our eyes closed, sometimes the inner gaze is going outward. But if we can get the sense of just lowering the gaze down, down, until it comes to rest on the breath, that helps to establish mindfulness and something to play around with. Other possibilities are counting the breath, in-breath, out-breath, 1, 2, up to 8 or 10, and then coming back to 1. Or using words, in, out, here, now, calm, peace. Or using images. Some teachers say not to use images, but other teachers say it's fine. I like to use an image of the wave coming in and going out again, but my attention is still on the breath. It's like my breath is like the wave coming in and going out. So we really do have to be careful to keep our attention on the breathing and not on the numbers or the words or the images. So just explore ways that work for you, that help you stay with the breath. Okay, next, the sutta contains 4 steps to be taken to develop mindfulness with breathing, and these steps build on each other, just as each of the 4 foundations builds on the one before. It's really a marvelous design when you stop to think about it, especially when you think that the Buddha delivered all these discourses orally. I mean, sometimes just in response to a question a person was asking him. I mean, he didn't have any paper or pens, and certainly no digital devices. So anyway, I think that's kind of amazing. So now to the 4 steps. They progress in one direction that results in calming the breath and consequently the body and the mind. So let's take the first 2 together. Breathing in long, he knows, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, he knows, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he knows, I breathe in short. Breathing out short, he knows, I breathe out short. And what's important here is that one knows. In these steps, we simply breathe naturally without controlling the breath, without forcing it in any way. We get to know the breath just as it is. Christina Feldman talks about befriending the breath, about developing a bond of intimacy with it. And really, breathing is our friend, isn't it? It keeps us alive. We could take an interest in it, like we're interested in friends. And interest helps us keep our attention on it, interest and curiosity. Is this breath long or short? Coarse or fine, deep, shallow? What else can we discover about it? Is this breath the same as the last one? The last one's gone. Will there be a new breath? So in the first 2 steps, we're simply aware of how we're naturally breathing. We're attentive, curious, interested. In the 3rd step, there's a change in what we do to establish mindfulness. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. In this step, we train. Training the mind to experience something specific, the whole body. So what's the whole body? Scholars and translators have different takes on what that means. Some say it's the breath body, inhaling and exhaling. And some say it's the physical body from the head to the toe. In terms of practice, I think that both work well for establishing mindfulness. If I'm feeling really scared, I tend to start with I breathe in and out, experiencing the whole physical body, because it seems to be easier for my mind to experience that broader area of focus before zooming in to focus on the breath body. So there are a number of ways of experiencing the whole physical body, but in keeping with the third step of the sutta, and I think what works well actually, is to breathe slightly deeper, and on the in-breath, spread the awareness through some area of the body. Relax, let go, breathe out. Then breathe in again and spread the awareness through another area of the body. Relax, let go, and so on from the head to the shoulders, down the arms to the hands, to the chest, the abdomen, the legs, the soles of the feet, and back up the length of the back and over the top of the head. I don't think it really matters. I don't think it matters what direction you go in or what order you do it in. So, you know, experiment and see what works best for you. So that's kind of the whole physical body breathing. And at some point during this kind of breathing, and usually fairly soon, the breath becomes quieter, and the mind is able to refine its focus and shift to I shall breathe in, experiencing the breath body. The breath body is the whole movement of the in-breath from the nostrils through the throat to the chest to the abdomen, and out breath, back out, chest, nostrils. And all you have to do is closely follow the breath. Just stay close to it and don't get ahead of it. And be aware of the body breathing, the rising of the chest, the rising and falling of the abdomen. So I think it's skillful to be flexible with which whole body you choose to practice at any given time, the physical body or the breath body or both. If the mind's already quiet, you may want to start with experiencing the breath body. It doesn't have to always be the same way. I think it depends a lot on your state of mind. Just don't skip this step altogether if you intend to practice what the Buddha is teaching here in this sutta. And remember to be aware of your attitude as you're practicing. Last week, Jean reminded us of that. The Buddha is said to be diligent, ardent, and resolute in practice. He also said in other suttas not to get too tight or contracted or narrow about it. He said it's kind of like holding a bird. If you squeeze the bird too tightly, then the bird is injured. And if you hold the bird too loosely, the bird flies away. So finding that balance in our energy as we practice is good. Okay, so let's just take a few minutes and practice what we've covered so far. So what I'm going to do is lead a short guided meditation. And you don't have to change your seating or anything, but just adjust the way that you're sitting. Body erect, relaxed, but alert. And set an intention to be present, to be aware of your breathing. And bring your attention to the natural flow of your breath, here and now, just as it is. Bring your mind close to your breath with an attitude of friendliness, interest, curiosity. Breathing in long. I know I breathe in long. Breathing out long. I know I breathe out long. Breathing in short. I know I breathe in short. Breathing out short. I know I breathe out short. In, out. Here, now. And now please lengthen your breath slightly. Breathe just a little bit deeper. And on the in-breath, spread your awareness from your head across your shoulders, down your arms to your hands. Breathe out, relax, and let go. And again, on any in-breath, breathe in and spread the awareness over your chest and abdomen, down your legs to the soles of your feet. Breathe out, relax, and let go. Breathe in and spread the awareness up from the soles of your feet, up the length of your back, and over the top of your head. Breathe out, relax, and let go. And now bring your awareness to the breath itself, the whole body of the breath. The cool touch of the breath at the nostrils, the rising of the chest, the abdomen, the falling of the abdomen, the chest, the warm touch of the breath at the nostrils. In, out, rising, falling. One trains thus. I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. One trains thus. I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. Sorry we had to move through that so quickly. This is definitely a short version. But if you take some time getting to know the breath and then experiencing the whole body, you'll see that gradually the breathing becomes much quieter, and it's quite easy for the breath, attention to refine its focus to some point on the breath's pathway. For some people, that might be the abdomen. For others, it's the place at or slightly below the nostrils. The touch of the breath as it goes in and out over that place. I personally like to focus on the nostrils because for me, that smaller place of focus seems to work better for calming the breath and consequently the mind and the body. But choose the place that works best for you. And whichever one you choose, like when you're practicing at home, stay with that one for at least a couple of sittings before you move on to another one. So with our focus now at one place, at the abdomen or the nostrils, or any other place that works better for you, we're ready for the transition to the fourth step. The fourth step. He trains thus. I shall breathe in, calming the bodily formation. He trains thus. I shall breathe out, calming the bodily formation. Here, bodily formation, according to Bhikkhu Bodhi, means the breath itself, the in and out breathing. And by the time you get to this fourth step, the breathing's already quite calm, and with steady, close attention to it, it gradually, in time, grows more and more and more quiet and very subtle in time, and with patience, and with persistence. The entire body grows still, and so does the mind. And the mind seems to merge with the breathing. There's a peacefulness and a contentment, an overall stillness and steadiness, plus an inner happiness. And that, all of that, is what's meant by calming the bodily formation. And calming the bodily formation, that completes the section on mindfulness of breathing. It's a good beginning. And among other things, it helps us to continue to be mindful. And the Buddha tells us to establish mindfulness that there is a body to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness, to sustain mindfulness in all postures and all activities and all reflections and contemplations. And next week, Steve will talk about the reflections of elements and the body parts. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And the week after that, Mary Haberman will be talking about mindfulness of postures and activities. Mm-hmm. So continuous mindfulness is not easy either. I've been trying to do it actually, and except for very short spurts, it seems often impossible. Even on retreats, it's quite challenging. But mindfulness of breathing is attainable, at least to some extent. And to whatever extent, it can be a great benefit not only to our practice on the cushion, but also in our daily lives. For example, attention to breathing helps us to be present, and the experience of just being present carries over into our daily lives. Not right away, all at once, but in time and gradually. Fewer thoughts about the past and future, fewer regrets and worries about them, meeting our experience, whatever it is, with kindness and compassion, not so concerned with holding on to things or getting rid of them, And all of that is liberating. Another benefit, it can give us a feel for some of the ways that our breathing and body and mind interact. Investigate that. If the body and mind are agitated, see what's going on with the breathing. If you're getting worked up, feeling restless, feeling angry, remember to watch the breath for a moment. It can give you pause, a chance to at least name your mind state, check the situation, and possibly influence your reaction, so that you're less prone to be governed by impulses and reactivity. And if the situation allows it, a few more moments of mindful breathing might even alter the mind state. Another benefit. Even as we're practicing mindfulness of breathing, we're cultivating liberating qualities. And knowing that can encourage us when the practice feels too hard or useless or impossible. For example, the qualities of patience, kindness and friendliness toward ourselves, endurance, non-judgment, balance, effort. And these qualities can also carry over into our daily lives. So these are just a few ways that mindfulness of breathing can help us live better. And I'm sure that you've experienced others and could add them to the list. But now let's go back to the sutta. As wonderful and helpful and as freeing all these benefits and qualities are, not to be minimized or overlooked or dismissed, and totally worth the effort of practicing. Even so, the Buddha's teaching in this sutta aim at something more specific. Here he's teaching the direct path. It goes in one direction toward attaining complete freedom from all the forms of greed and hatred and ignorance. The end of suffering. That's a high bar. And if you've read the sutta, you know that undertaking this whole path from mindfulness of breathing to knowing as it really is each of the Four Noble Truths, undertaking that path is no small task. It requires that we follow the Buddha's very specific and very clear instructions for contemplating body, feeling tones, mind, and mind objects. But as we follow his instructions, our mindfulness strengthens and the mind becomes increasingly concentrated, pure, bright, and steady. It can see things differently, and we experience deeper, liberating insights, what Ayakema calls understood experience, the third kind of wisdom that Jean spoke about last week. Deep insights pertaining to the Four Noble Truths, the impermanence of everything, the cordlessness or emptiness of everything, insights that culminate in total freedom, not a trace of clinging left. That's the result, the Buddha says, of diligently practicing the teachings as they are taught in this sutta. So now you may be thinking, well, that whole path is fine for monks and nuns, but for me, forget it. It's all way too much. Way, way beyond reach. I guess it is, maybe, too much. Too much for us householders, anyway. And way too much to develop an experience, at least in this lifetime. And the Buddha didn't say we householders had to do it. He said it's fine for us to contemplate Buddha and Dhamma and Sangha and our generosity and virtue. But he didn't say not to do it. And he didn't say it's impossible for us to come to the end of suffering. Actually, Ayakami used to tell our students that it is possible. You know, I just can't help thinking, isn't it something to aspire to? And really, wouldn't it be nice to be free from craving and clinging? Wouldn't it be nice? And although it may be very, 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 very far from attainable, it's still a joy to think about and still a motivation for practicing. So just keep breathing, mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out, one breath at a time, intimately knowing each breath, experiencing it, calming it, and see where it takes you. So thank you for listening. And now we're going to have some small group discussions.